The Money Show.
Make Money Mondays.
So I've got to stay focused because whenever I talk to Ayesha Pandor, I get terribly excited about the tech and the jobs and the opportunity and the creation of value and the creation of opportunity. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that before we talk about history and money and family and all of that sort of stuff. Ayesha Pandor, who's the chief executive of Sweep South. She and her husband, Alan Rubick, started this business 6, 7, 8 years ago, a while back, after taking a lift in overseas and they were traveling. And they kind of thought, well, can we not create something similar to empower domestic workers to be able to make better decisions as to where they work, when they work, at what rate they work, how they work, and also then for their customers, you and I, if we choose to have some domestic help of a day without a permanent working relationship, that we can assess whether or not somebody is going to be well suited to come into our home and environment to do some work for us. And that way you empower both sides of this equation. And it's a massive revolution in domestic work in South Africa. You last time we chatted, Ayesha, you were gearing up and starting up and everybody was sort of preparing to get back to work. Have most of the 20,000 women on your platform been able to get back to work in any meaningful way?
Hi, Bruce. So firstly, thanks for having me. Always great to chat to you. So we've had, it's more or less been stable since we've entered level 3, which we expected. So a lot of our regular customers have come back. And I think as a business, this probably isn't the best time for new customers to be trying out the service. So, you know, we've been pleased to see people returning and are happy with that. And that's kind of remained steady.
And for the women, are they able to make a living now? I mean, nobody's got extra money, I'm sure, but are people beginning to get decent levels of work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're getting there. But what we've continued to do is, so through the fund that we raised for Sweep Stars, we've continued to supplement incomes and will continue to do so probably for the next month or two. Until, you know, numbers start getting back to normal. So definitely not at, you know, the same sorts of numbers in terms of how much people are earning through the platform as we were pre-COVID. But, you know, what we promised to try and do for Sweep Stars is, you know, to try and just supplement that for as long as we can.
And then Sweep South Connect, which is your broader offering for people, sort of tradespeople, that was just getting off the ground as we went into COVID, and timing is everything in life and in business. That has launched and it is operational. Is it gaining traction?
It's gaining traction really nicely. We were, I think, in the first week or two of June, we were, I think, 500% up from the previous month.
Sure.
July also off to a really strong start. We've had interest from a lot of people who are providing a range of different services. That's doing really well. And I think what we love about Connect is that it's allowing people who basically offer any service. We had someone come and fix our washing machine the other day. But, you know, it's someone who provides any service, got yoga instructors, whatever it is, to earn, which is, I think, so crucial right now when, you know, the climate around people being able to work is just so weird. People are nervous. They're not, you know, looking in the places they would normally look to find people to help them at home. So we're really, really pleased at the traction with Connect.
I mean, I did wonder for a while whether the gig economy was dead because, you know, the gig economy, this wonderful invention where you could have, you know, 1, 2, 5, 10 different sources of income and it was fabulous. But when every single source of income stopped suddenly on the 26th of March, suddenly the huge chasm of insecurity that underpins the gig economy was exposed. It's nice to see that it's coming back and actually may get a boost from this because, you know, people are losing full-time work and can now start to earn at least piecemeal incomes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, the acceleration of kind of technology adoption and the adoption of ways of working that are already becoming more established in more kind of technology developed markets, I think that's been one of the most interesting things about this pandemic and just looking at, you know, South Africans and things like online shopping. You know, taking an Uber instead of taking a Lyft with someone or public transport. So that's been really interesting to see. And I mean, I'm someone who believes in the gig economy. I think the gig economy or gig is a bit of a misnomer, because I think it's probably the way that a lot of people are just going to be finding work in future. And, you know, if you look at people working from home and how many people have just adopted that so easily, I think, yeah, this time that we're going through has challenged a lot of kind of norms about how people get work and how people work.
And it could be the beginning of something great. It really could, in terms of this. We all dream of the 4-day work week or the 4-hour work week, as Tim Ferriss sold it. He lied, by the way. It could be the beginning of the end of the job, which is, you know, for many people terrifying, and for others massively, massively liberating. Tell me about Aisha Pandor growing up. Mum, of course, let's get to full disclosures here. Mum is Naledi. She is a government minister. She's in charge of international relations. And dad is Sharif Pandor. When I last checked, the CEO of Ikamva Investment Holdings. He's been in business all of his life, hasn't he?
A lot of his life. My parents met as teachers, which I think a lot of people don't know. People often don't, especially with my mom, people who, you know, have public positions, you think of the person kind of as you know them today. But I grew up with parents who were teachers and who met as teachers. Remember my dad, when I was very young, taking me into class, you know, if he had to look after me during the day for whatever reason. And for most of my kind of growing up, they were, my mom was then an academic and lectured at UCT, was a senior lecturer at UCT. And then my dad started to become involved in kind of community work, community activation. And then from there started to, I think more entrepreneurially. And he's a true entrepreneur, that he just loves looking for opportunities and things that he's interested in and taking them up.
I want to explore that in just a bit. I mean, were they both very political as young teachers? Certainly mom clearly was, and she became very influential within the ANC. And she comes from a long line of politically active people. I mean, your grandfather, great-grandfather, Sire, was one of the signatories of the Freedom Charter, for example.
Yeah, so I mean, come from a political family. My great grandfather was ZK Matthews, who was a prominent lecturer at Fort Hare University, and then my grandfather as well was also an activist. In fact, my great grandfather and grandfather were, I think, the only father and son to both be arrested and be tried as part of the treason trial, and then obviously my mom being politically involved as well. My father was too, I think more kind of on the ground, involved in MK. All through my childhood, the kind of people that I idolized and, you know, my version of celebrities were the Mandelas and the Sisulus and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. I remember the first time meeting him, just being like, you know, so like starstruck. I definitely grew up in that environment and a lot of kind of robust political discussion at the dinner table.
Absolutely. So political discussion was very much part of that upbringing. So you got two teachers in the house, not earning great salaries, because we know that teachers don't get properly remunerated. And the talk is all about politics. Is the talk ever about money or not?
Yes, my parents did talk about money. My dad probably more so. I think my parents always equated kind of money with work, which is something I'm also trying to unlearn a little bit now. And, you know, I'll maybe talk a little bit more about that, kind of being a business owner. But definitely money was discussed. I remember my mom, when she was teaching, she used to bake scones and in the evenings and then try and sell them to people to make a bit of extra money. We talked about money a lot. My dad loves lectures and loves giving advice, and he would have all of these little sayings, which was so frustrating to us as children. Whenever we'd ask for like a little bit of extra pocket money, he'd say things like, you know, never a borrower or a lender be. It would just be so annoying. So he'd have these little nuggets of wisdom that he would, love passing on to us about money.
Have you become him? I mean, because you're small kids now. Maybe they're a bit young to start demanding money from you. But we find we become our children. Do you think it grows on trees, for example? That's another one.
Yeah, I have. I've got a 10-year-old, and I find it incredibly annoying when she asks me for money to buy things for her, iPad games and video games. Because to me, it's just like, that's like vapor. Like, you're going to enjoy that thing, and then it's going to disappear. And so trying to teach her about saving, about investing, money, about the value of money and how to think about money. So I've definitely become my dad. but my mom also extremely conservative with money, very disciplined, very conservative. And I think there's also an element of me that's there as well. So I'm a mix, I think, between the two.
You went and you studied, you're a scientist by training. You were studying genetics and you were a qualified geneticist. And then just for good measure, you added a business degree in. And if you Google Aisha Pandor, you see lots of lovely photographs of her getting 2 degrees in one day. 1 degree is not enough. One from the UCT Graduate School of Business in the afternoon, the other from the main campus in the morning. I think that was the order of things. Did you sort of set out to become a business owner? It would appear not. I mean, at one point you were destined to be staring through a microscope forever.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't even think of business as something that I could do or would be interesting to me, or, it didn't seem like a career path until I was getting to the end of my PhD. And I think just started to think about the kind of practical application of biotechnology and science, and felt frustrated. Like, people study and they do research and then it stays in a lab. Like, why can't you practically make those things useful? And I think business gets a bad rap a lot of the time. But, a business and making money in a way is an indicator of value. So, for something research to be truly valuable, it should, in my view, take that next step from being something that's just done in a lab to being something that people are able to value and use and will pay for.
Tell me about this idea of money equals work and your need to unlearn that, because money does equal work. Unlearn me, unteach me. It broadened my thinking on this.
So, I mean, both my parents are very, very, very hardworking, people. And the way that I was brought up is that you work very hard and you earn a salary. And my dad was not this, but I think this is something that was it was ingrained in me very much from my mom. And, you work very hard, you earn a salary, and then if you do a good job, someone will give you a raise. And you'll earn a little bit more, and that's what you'll do for the rest of your life. And I think one of the biggest kind of revelations to me about business and earning is that you don't have to physically be working and earn a salary to create wealth. In fact, that's how people who are wealthy, it's not by working a job, it's by making your money work for you, and it's by So Naval Ravikant, who's a US investor and entrepreneur, has this saying. He says, earn with your mind and not your time. And so I had to unlearn this idea of like money just being about the hours of work that you personally put in. And rather the idea of, your money being able to earn while you sleep. So creating something that can create value that's not tied to your physical energy.
We're talking this evening to Aisha Pandor. She is the chief executive and co-founder of Sweep South. More with her in a moment.
The Money Show. Make Money Mondays.
Having a job doesn't make you rich. Using your brain and creating an asset of value, as Uncle Pavlo on the Thursday night will teach us, gives you a better chance of creating wealth over time. Making money while you sleep, says Aisha Pandor, the co-founder and chief executive of Sweep South. It's not all moonlight and roses, though. I mean, you and your husband sold everything when you started Sweep South. Mum must have had a look of horror on her face. Dad, yeah. I don't know. I've got mum, you know, via her public persona. We know her better. She must have been delighted when you arrived with small kids on her doorstep to say, guess what we've done? All of these studies over a decade. That's nice. We're educated. We're clever. I'm a doctor, PhD. That's lovely. But we're coming to move in with you because we've come up with this madcap idea to start our own business. And yes, we've both given up our jobs to do so. They must have thought you'd gone mad.
they were not pleased. My mom did think we'd gone mad. She said to us that we should have 3 years worth of savings before we resign from our jobs. And, you know, that just would have been impossible. So we didn't listen. We sold literally like everything, almost everything that we owned. And my mom said, just this, like, this is fine. You guys are adults. Just don't come asking me for help. You know, you guys have got to do this on your own. And then about a year and a half after starting Sweeps Out, when we'd sold our house and everything in the house and the car, and we had one car left, which we drove from Joburg to Cape Town, we knocked on the door and said, Mom, can we come and stay with you? We don't have any more money. And we ended up living with them for almost 4 years. They were not very pleased. But thankfully, were kind parents and let us stay with them.
It would have been a scandal had they thrown you out on the street. Good story, though. Would have been a good story. Would have made a good story. When you look at what your success now and the fact that you have managed to raise last year 50 million rand through the foundry at Naspers and through the Susan and Michael Dell Foundation and DJ Black Coffee coming in, do you sometimes have to pinch yourself to say, okay, finally, it feels like this might just work?
It does. It feels incredible to have gotten to this point. I think, you know, from the first investment we got, I remember, so it was a guy called Vinny Lingham, who was a technology. And is now, you know, living in the States and is still an entrepreneur, but also an investor. So he actually made the first investment into our business. And I remember watching him on, I think it was Dragon's Den, before we'd met him, and just thinking, like, you know, wow, this guy's done it, and, you know, like, this is so amazing, and you know, one day it'll be cool to chat to him if we ever start a business. And then speaking to him and pitching him and him becoming an investor, and I think at that stage it already felt like, you know, wow, like, this is, you know, this is really something. And then this getting to this stage is kind of a mix of, It feels crazy that people have, you know, invested that much in us and believe in us. And obviously, you know, there's merit for them to do that, and they want to make a return on that investment. But I think there's also a lot of pressure as well. And, you know, again, investors, especially venture capital investors, are looking to make a, you know, minimum kind of 3x return on their money. So, so it definitely also feels like pressure in a positive way, but, you know, pressure to actually continue delivering.
When you started and you sold everything to start, when you say everything, did you sell pension funds and everything? I mean, properly clear out
everything. We, like, unit trusts, pension fund, the house, literally had someone come into our house and put a price tag on everything. Everything. We kept our clothes, my wedding ring, and our car, a little polo hatchback.
And when you look at it now, I mean, is everything dependent on this business working? Because that's quite a good motivator.
It is. I mean, I do think, I think you've got to get to a point as well where you do have kind of diversified income streams or diversified assets. So, you know, the vast majority of what we have is still in Sweeps Out, but we slowly are starting to get ourselves to a point where, you know, there are other investments as well, which I think is wise. I think, but, you know, there's certainly enough, you know, those other investments are not enough to make up for everything that we've put into the business. And so that probably, I mean, it's a big motivator. But also, you know, starting your own business, the reason why you started has got to be motivation enough. The money and making money back shouldn't be the primary thing. Again, you know, I just think of money as an indicator of value. And we've got to create enough value for people to want to keep on using our business. But the kind of mission behind our business is really what drives me and what makes me want to keep on going.
Aisha Pandor, always lovely to chat. Thank you so much for taking time out for us this evening. Aisha Pandor, the co-founder and chief executive of Sweep South, talking money on The Money Show.